Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome everyone to Your Money with David Hayes. This is Doug Hughes live in studio, gearing up for what we call the investment show. We're going to have Rod Holloway. He's here in the studio with me tonight. Mr. David Hayes, who's attending a function for his son at this point, but he will be into the program in just a little bit. So we're going to get into the investment show. Rod, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
Good, good. We're going to talk about the NASDAQ, Rod. We're going to talk about the broad markets. We're going to talk also about some investment illusions and some human behaviors when it comes to investments. Got some really, really insightful things when it comes to the overall theme of investments. But we want to also talk about something that's coming up that we want to invite everyone to. David Hayes and I are doing a program called Rejuvenate Your Retirement. It's offered through the Ivy Tech Community College Center for Lifelong Learning. The dates of the program are Tuesday, March the 10th and 17th, and Thursday, March 26th and April 2nd. These are going to be held in the morning time. If you're interested in this, you can register three ways. You can call Ivy Tech, 330-6041. You could complete the registration form along with this program that you can call our office, 812-334-3190, and get a hold of that. Or, and this might be the easiest way, you can register online at www.ivytech.edu.cll. Really great program. We talk about planning retirement income. We talk about life planning. We really talk about some things that we run into on a very frequent basis when it comes to healthcare planning. A lot of people are very concerned and have a lot of questions about healthcare, what it costs, what ages mean what, and what things they should be involved in as far as insurance and Medicare. And another thing that people we find always have questions about when we do this program is estate planning. How are our accounts, how are they registered, what does this mean? If we pass away, what about words like probate, and what kind of a checklist do we have put together? And we kind of help people do those things. So program coming up in the next week and a half, couple weeks, very good. Give our office a call. That's 812-334-3190 if you'd like to learn how to be involved in that. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to jump right into the investment show with Rod Holloway. We're going to talk about the NASDAQ and what's been going on with that. If you follow investments, had kind of a benchmark reached this week, and we want to talk about that. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Almost 15 years to the day, March 10th of 2000, the NASDAQ Composite Index traded at its all-time high, 5,049. The NASDAQ actually has traded since February 5th of 1971. It is a fairly young index in that regard. It's about 44 years old. But again, 15 years ago, this coming, what would that be, Tuesday, Rod, the NASDAQ traded at 5,000. What happened this last week? There was big news about the NASDAQ, and we're going to talk a lot about what's involved with the NASDAQ, but tell us what happened.
Yeah, well, we hit 5,000. Of course, back in 2000, we were on the major bull market run, running through the 90s. Really, if you talk about cyclical bull markets, it really started back in the middle 80s. But of course, the 90s itself, consistently strong year after year after year, hit many brand new milestones on all the major indices, NASDAQ being 5,000 that it hit. S&P, Dow Jones, many of those other indices breached that old high some years ago. Many of them were in 2007 when they actually breached that old high. NASDAQ hadn't been there. And NASDAQ had such a tumble from 2000, from that 5,000 mark to its low of the tech bubble bursting.
An amazing drop, really.
Oh, yeah, to where, you know, we would even joke around the office that we may not see 5,000 in our working lifetime. Mm-hmm. You know, know, of course, we had always hoped that we would potentially see it again, but we weren't sure that we would ever get to that point again. And lo and behold, we cracked it. Not only did we crack it, we actually closed above it. That was one thing that even back during the tech run, we breached 5,000 multiple times, but I think we had only actually closed above it maybe twice. I think Monday was the third time that the NASDAQ had ever closed above it. Of course, it was short-lived, the celebration on Monday. We have trended down below 5,000 since then. No major sell-off, but we are below the 5,000 mark.
We're trading, I think, on the NASDAQ about 49.82. So to your point, it has come back down below the 5,000. Rod, I remember back in those days, all you had to do to have a really, really strong stock return was you had to have a dot-com attached to it, or it was a technology, something brand new, a lot of speculation on what people were going to do. The whole technology thing really just erupted during that time. But the NASDAQ today tends to be a little bit different flavor. The securities are different. The positions are different. Tell us, what when someone looks at NASDAQ today versus 15 years ago, what does this thing look like?
Sure. Yeah, there are a lot of differences. Number one, in a true apples-to-apples comparison, you shouldn't be comparing 5,000 to 5,000. You have inflation, and inflation affects every asset class out there, whether it's hard assets, whether it's individual stocks, it's bonds, it's the paycheck that you're taking home, the loaf of bread you're buying at the grocery store. So in all reality, an apples-to-apples comparison, I haven't done the math. I did read an article that inflated 5,000 out for 15 years. It's somewhere north of 6,000 is a true inflation adjusted number that would be a fair comparison. So that's one thing that's different. Another thing that's different is back then the NASDAQ, I think something like 60% of the stocks listed on the NASDAQ were pure technology. A lot of them internet.com type stocks. Today you're looking at about 40% of it being pure technology stocks. The NASDAQ has evolved into no longer just being thought of as purely technology. Of course, a lot of tech companies do still go there, but it's not exclusive to them. But it's the same with other sectors and industries, banking, small regional banks, industrial companies. There are many different companies that are listing on the NASDAQ, so it's not purely tech heavy. The biggest difference, though, between our last breach of 5,000 and this one, it's earnings, it's revenue. The companies today have it. The companies in 2000 did not. As you said, leading into this in your intro, really all you had to do was come out with a .com at the end of your name and your stock soared. And you had no earnings. You had negative earnings. And in many cases, you told the whole world, we're going to lose money for the next 5 years at least.
And the world didn't care. It just kept buying and kept buying.
Exactly.
Buying into losing propositions or companies losing money just based on this idea that whatever this technology or website or whatever it was going to just explode.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And even legit big tech companies back in those days that had earnings at the time, they didn't have as much earnings to support the price. So that price to earnings multiple or price to earnings ratio that so many people look at to determine whether a company is a good value or not, they were sky high, and they did not have the growth rates of the earnings and the sales to merit that high of an earnings multiple on those stocks. So but the biggest thing regardless is the fact that today NASDAQ 5000, we got there because of real revenue, real earnings, real companies doing real things. Now, does that mean there are no individual stories on the NASDAQ that may be in bubble territory, that may be overvalued? No, there definitely are some individual stories out there that merit that. But as a whole, it is nothing compared to 2000 when the NASDAQ as a whole just continued to go and go and go. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was kind of crazy to think some of the valuations and prices people were willing to pay for companies that really didn't have much of a business model.
We can go down through pets.com, through all of the Red Hats, all these different names that we can just go through. And again, there was really more sizzle than substance, and people were just not aware of that. The flip side to that, though, Rod, is that we have some other names that were back in the NASDAQ, technology companies that are now large, have cash reserves, and even pay dividends. So even the technology sector itself has moved into a better position. It's really right in front of the American investor's eyes, developed from the infant stage to now you have a sector that actually has cash and dividends and things like that.
Sure. It's interesting because many people talk about the mature tech companies and, and the slow grow mature tech companies that, as you alluded to, are paying dividends. And that's your Microsoft and Intel and Cisco. And it's hard to throw Apple in that slow growth, but it's a mature company that's been around a long time as well. And yeah, it has completely changed because back then, almost every technology company you looked at, you viewed that, man, the world is their oyster and they just have no place to go but up. And those companies, those mature tech companies that I mentioned, doesn't mean that they don't have great opportunities ahead of them. But to really push the needle and have rapid growth is extremely hard for many of those companies because they are so large nowadays and they have so much reoccurring revenue of the products that have been out in the marketplace for many, many years now.
Absolutely. Rod, we have to do a little disclosure here about the NASDAQ itself. It is an indice, so we need to mention that indices are unmanaged. They do not incur fees or expenses, cannot be invested into directly, and individual investor results will vary. This material represents an assessment of the market environment at a specific point in time and is not intended to be a forecast of future events or guarantee future results. We need to take a break, Rod. When we come back, we're going to talk about this last 2 months. Market was down in January, and guess what? It bounces right back in February. We're going to talk about what in the world is going on in the overall broad stock market. This is Doug Hughes on Your Money with David Hayes. A very surprising start to the year, Rod, with the major markets, the Dow Jones, the NASDAQ, and the S&P 500. They actually had a negative start to the year. It was kind of everybody wondering, is this going to be the 10% correction? I think some of the indices were down like 3%. But then when we look at the end of February's close, if you take the end of January's close to the end of February's close, the Dow Jones is up about 5.5%. The NASDAQ was up about 7.1%. The S&P was up 5.5%. So that volatility that started in January was answered with some strong returns in February. What is going on out here?
Yeah, well, you know, there are a couple things that go into that. One, you had another solid year last year in which you had nice market performance. So it wasn't all that unusual for a little bit of a breather as we headed into January. But then we had a whole lot of dark clouds that were out there. We had the Russia and the Ukraine situation. Of course, the Middle East is
always a
constant
question mark.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a constant. It wasn't a brand new thing. It's something that's been there, but sometimes it seems to rear its ugly head and we pay a little more attention to it than we do at other times. But that was going on out there. You had Greece back in the headlines and the possibility of default and them wanting to renegotiate and an election that they were having and the guy who was leading and who eventually won ran on a platform of saying, I'm going back and renegotiating this deal. This is a bad deal for Greece. We're going to renegotiate. So there were a lot of dark clouds out there that created the volatility and the volatility in either direction. The Dow Jones Industrial had a lot of days in the month of January to where it moved more than 100 points. Unfortunately, more of those were to the downside than to the upside. But even when it did move up, we typically moved greater than 100 points. So now we come into February and everybody kind of realizes, you know what? Those dark clouds, they are dark. There is some potential issues there, but are they really affecting the companies, you know, on the major indices and the stocks that are people buying? And in most circumstances, the answer is no, not in any major way. So February rallies back and we have a strong February. So as you alluded to, February had some big performance. NASDAQ around 7% just for the month, around 4 to 6% on a lot of the other major indices. You were down, depending on what indice you looked at, anywhere from 2 to 4% in January itself. You come back positive anywhere from 4 to 7% in February. So right now, year to date, you're sitting around 2 to 3% positive on most of the broad market indices, the S&P 500, the mid caps, the small caps, those are up a little over 2. I think mid caps up a little over 3. NASDAQ has been a strong performer, and year to date, it's more like a 4-4.5% year to date return. None of those numbers include the move we had today, in which we had a positive close today. On those types of things. But there are just a lot of things out there that create fear. And in the short run, not always do people sit back and assess, okay, what impact do these events really have on stocks' earnings, their revenue? It's one of the things I preach many, many times, both on this show to our clients and on Glass's show in the morning when I give my Monday and Friday morning updates, which is, earnings and revenue and sales and margins, that's what drives stocks long-term.
Sure.
In the short run, any number of things can affect the short-run fluctuations of those individual stocks. But long-term, it's earnings that you want to see.
And Rod, anyone, if you ask them, would say, I want to follow where who's making money, right? I mean, when you're an investor, and you say, sure, absolutely, I want to follow someone who's making money. So dividend payers, people who are continuing to pay dividends, raise their dividends, all these are good signs. And like you said, you have to ask the question, what does the Greek situation have to do with this particular company paying its dividends and having good earnings?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And a lot of the dividend stuff, people feel compelled to go buy the dividend payers because interest rates are so low.
Sure.
You know, we've discussed this many a times, but the 10-year is paying a little over 2% right now. Well, it's not hard to go find a quality large cap stock that's been around for a long, long time, that has a proven business model that everybody knows and is very familiar with, paying 3.5%, you know, so you get a bit of a push of people heading into those areas, and that's part of what has helped to drive these stock prices up. But even with that scenario, if you really look at valuations aren't stretched. I'm not going to tell you they're cheap. You know, the stock market's not cheap like it was back in 2009 in March of 2009 when the S&P 500 hit the dreaded 666 number. Things were cheap then.
Right.
You could throw a dart at a dartboard, and whatever stock you hit with the Wall Street paper you put up there was probably going to go up from that point. You're definitely not at that case right now. I think you have a fair valuation. I think you have earnings growth. The argument from the bear side is that, okay, you have earnings growth, but everybody is pushing those earnings expectations down because of what has been going on in the global slowdown. You know, China came out recently and said, hey, we expect 7% growth. Well, that's the lowest growth number they've thrown out in a long time. So you have that going down. But I think one of the other aspects that people are kind of ignoring, it's discussed, and people are saying, it's not showing up yet, which is the cheap gas prices and what it's doing. Mm-hmm. So eventually we're going to see some earnings revisions up for certain sectors and certain companies, because even though we're not seeing it in spending today, it does not mean that it's not going to have an impact as we move forward. When you look back that a year ago it was taking us $4-4.5 to a gallon to buy gasoline, and now today we're much cheaper than that. Those are real dollars in the ordinary common average man's pocket, and those eventually are going to get used in some way, shape, or form that is going to have a positive impact on the economy.
Rod, tell me, before we go to another break, tell me a little bit about institutional investors versus retail investors right now. Institutional investors, what are they doing? I keep hearing people talking about when the market's down 5 that they flood in, they don't want their track record to be blemished, and that's why we're not getting this 10% correction. Maybe we're stopping in January at a 3 or a 4. Are institutional investors plowing into the market when this dives like this and that gives some stability to
sure.
what we're seeing?
For the most part, the institutional guy doesn't fully leave the market. Many times he rotates. You know, so he goes from one sector to another. Now, he may go to cash for a little while before he decides what the new sector is that he's going to. But yeah, that has played into it a little bit, especially in the hedge fund world. The hedge funds have really struggled here lately. So you're hearing more and more talk in the media of people saying, hey, wait a minute here. You know, this old 2 and 20 model of 2% fee and 20% of the profit over a certain hurdle, and they're all different. Some it's tied to a benchmark. Some it's just a flat number. But that profit model and the way they get paid, people are starting to say, hey, wait a minute, I'm not getting the performance to pay you that much extra dollars. So yes, they feel compelled to play catch up. And while many of the hedge fund guys have said, you know what, we're due a correction and it isn't happening, they've got to play the game because their bonus many times is tied to their performance and them beating certain benchmarks.
Rod, it's always a great discussion, and people really love to talk about it when the markets have become volatile. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mr. David Hayes. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Some things, when you look at them, you just don't understand them. A figment of your imagination. You don't know what you're really reading. David Hayes is live in studio joining us. And David, we're going to talk about the illusions of investments and some different things that we've come across that we think would be entertaining to discuss.
Absolutely. Investment illusion versus investment reality is the name of the game for the next segment. You know, I listened to you and Rod on my way to the station. Of course, my son was wrestling. So number one priority is to be there at the wrestling meet. And he competed hard. Didn't quite pull out a victory, but he's coming off a four straight wins. So
a win streak.
He gave him a little slap on the rear end and hit it out the door. But yeah, I'm here. I'm grateful for everyone listening. Good job, guys, kicking off the show. But there is a lot of, you know, misconceptions about things, investment illusions versus investment reality. But one thing I wanted to mention, Dougie, before we get too far along, you know, Rod does such a terrific job.
Yes.
And he's on top of this stuff. He researches it. He studies it. He manages it every single day.
Wealth of knowledge.
The book that you and I have put together that will be on Amazon very, very soon, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, there's a section on investments, and this is kind of your section that you talked about. You mentioned one of the most proven portfolio managers, Jean Marie Evrard, one of the greatest ever in our opinion. You wrote about that. And I suggested this week after the book was out, I was reading this and I thought, why didn't we say something like
Hot Rod Holloway?
The best portfolio manager that we know, Hot Rod Holloway. And he laughed and I said, Rod, do you think that would have given our book more credibility or less credibility? His answer to that question was, well, certainly a lot more giggles. So we're going to be talking more about Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, a resource for adults ages 50 and over, as it rolls off the presses here very, very soon. We're so excited that that it's here in our little hands, and it's a good-looking book.
It.
It's about 186 pages long. Going to talk more about that over the next several weeks. But, Doug, you're right, exactly. We wanted to talk about some of the illusions out there as it comes to investments. And you and I have been doing this a long time. And, you know, people have a lot of illusions about the world and investments. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess when you talk about illusions, the art of an illusion kind of takes advantage of our natural reactions. An illusion can make things seem that they exist or don't exist, you know, and they give us a false sense of possibility sometimes.
Sure.
Investing is a little bit the same way. The markets can take advantage of our natural reactions. In fact, the most important principles of investing are almost always counterintuitive, like rebalancing, for an example. I always say that at the end of the last year, when you looked at your equities are up, your bonds might have still been up, you thought, okay, the most counterintuitive thing is to sell the things that have done really well and buy the things that haven't. Yeah, it's kind of counterintuitive, but some of the most important principles of investing are. So our natural reaction to a market situation can be very counterproductive, basically. A serious setback to our financial goals. I mean, that's what happens when you make these emotional and reactionary decisions that are kind of based on our natural reactions to things. So you got to see clearly. I mean, we want to help you become better informed. We want you to become more of a sophisticated investor from learning from the mistakes that other people have made by following their natural reactions. We want to help you find ways to be less focused on these short-term movements in the market and just have more consistency as it relates to your investment strategies, folks.
Exactly. And, you know, there's no shortage of media. There's no shortage of commercials. There's no shortage of radio shows. There's no shortage of information out there that you can pick up. So how do you decipher between what's real, what's an illusion, but even more than that, what is your reaction going to be to statements that look up or down or to headline news that is constantly in front of you? And some of these things give some pretty wild illusions that cause people to really derail from their financial plans.
Well, I was talking to my dad. Dad asked me, hey, what's on the show tonight? And I said, we're going to have a section on investment illusions versus investment realities. And I told him a little bit about it. And he said, well, that's why we have you guys to help kick some of that out. Yeah, Dad, but that's for people that generally have money rolling from retirement accounts, getting into the distribution phase. What about that person that's been working for 30 years, saving in that 401k? I always tell the tale of two tales, the two girls that worked at the same place, exactly the same amount of time, sisters, saved exactly the same amount. One had an office job, one was in the factory. The guy and the gal in the factory never looked at her statements ever. And I helped these folks set up their retirement account allocations in 1996, Doug. That was only 2 years into the business. They both retired now. One had $80,000 more than the other person. And the question might arise, why is that? I mean, they both saved the same amount of money. I helped them allocate it from the very beginning. Why is that? The one that was in the office had access to a computer. And they were on that computer a lot, checking their balances, listening to other people. And anytime they heard something in the news that scared them, guess what, Doug? They'd move it to that fixed account.
Sure.
$80,000 more dollars did the person in the factory have than the person in the office just simply because they didn't worry about it. They left it alone. They controlled the things they can control, which was savings, working, and things like that. So, Doug, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to start walking through some of these illusions and tell you the realities. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, everyone, welcome back. You know, there are so many illusions when it comes to investing. There's myths, there's a reality, and, you know, I want to talk about several of those tonight. And, Doug, as we go through the list here of the illusions versus investment reality, the very first thing that has to come to mind is volatility.
We just had a great discussion, David, with Rod in the previous part of the program. We talked about the markets were down between, depending on the index, 2 and 4% in January. And then by the end of February, from January, January 30th to February 27th, the markets were up between 5.5% and 7.1%. So when we talk about volatility, we're talking about 60 days in which the markets dropped between 2 and 4, and then they came back up between 5 and 7. Let's talk about volatility. Should it be feared?
Yeah, because that's the illusion. Should it be feared? I mean, the typical reaction to volatility is get the heck out of the way. Just get out of stocks altogether. But because most people want more consistency. They don't want those ups and downs. But given that the S&P index has averaged 10.98% from the end of 1973 through like the end of 2013, 2014.
The year of my birth, yes.
Well, that's 3 years before the year of my birth.
Yeah.
Everyone expects a similar return every year. Hey, it's averaged 10%, so I should get 10%. That's not the way it works. In fact, the index returned between 9 and 11% only two times during that over 40-year period. So usually it was above or below the average of 10.98 and sometimes a lot. I mean, that's the thing. So should volatility be feared? In fact, Doug, they call the VIX, which is the measurement of volatility, the fear index. And I think that the chief illusion is the instinctive aversion to volatility, and that many of us forget that volatility actually represents a potential opportunity. And when you look at volatility, the ups and downs, if you're ready at the right moment and you're expecting volatility, and that's really the reality of it, expect volatility, then you can take advantage of it. I mean, take a longer-term look at volatility. Don't look at short-term gyrations in the market. And when I say short-term gyrations, that could be over a day, week, or even a year. That's all short-term, especially when you're looking at your investment life of 20 or 30 years. So don't get too worked up about it. In fact, one of the things that we were talking about as we were preparing for the show is being opportunistic. You know, if you go back to 1973 through 2014 and you had $10,000 invested in the S&P 500 index, and I heard the wonderful disclosure that you gave earlier, very compliant.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. $10,000 grew over that 30-year period, or 40-year period, excuse me, to $641,435. So a $10,000 investment in 1973 at the end of 2013 grew to 641,000. Now, here's the thing, Doug. Had a person, every time the market went down 8%, instead of getting freaked out and jumping to the sidelines, said, this might be an opportunity. I'm going to throw in an extra couple grand.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, it didn't happen that many times over that 40-year period.
17 times.
17 times, I counted as well. An 8% drop or more in a month.
Mm-hmm.
And they threw in an extra $2,000. And sometimes it happened, okay, here's two, and next month, two more in the 70s, and two more. So mm-hmm. you were thinking, am I throwing good money after bad? But here's the reality of it. That same $10,000 invested in 1973, throwing in an extra $2,000 every time it dipped 8% mm-hmm. in a month, grew to an astounding $1.346 million. For the person that was apprehensive and said, hey, every time it dropped 8% in a month, I was going to move $2,000 into, let's say, a savings account. You know how much their balance was, Doug, at the end of that? Not because you had the number in front of you, but if your eyes were closed.
My eyes were closed, I would guess. Instead of having 641, I would have 150.
Yeah, and the real answer was $58,800. Wow. So basically, people get feared out of doing what they should do, and that's actually invest more. So don't fear volatility. Embrace volatility.
And look for ways to use volatility to your strengths. For example, what you're talking about there, David, is those 17 times the market was down 8% or more in a month, if you put $2,000 in on each one of those 70 times, that's $34,000. The difference, however, is between $1,346,000 and $641,000. That's $700,000 difference by investing $34,000 over that time frame. That's pretty outstanding.
It's pretty, and also brings to the point that you should never have all of your powder into the game. Always
exactly.
keep a little dry powder around for those opportunities. The next solution, Doug, that I've brought up here in the show, or I want to bring up in the show, is that fixed investments are risk-free. You know, since our natural instinct is to avoid risk, many folks will just try to reduce their risk of volatility by avoiding equities altogether in favor of things like bonds and cash and CDs and money market funds. I mean, Wayne Thacker was telling me that over 65% of public employees have their retirement savings in the PERF plan or the teacher's retirement plan in the G fund, paying 0.35% or something crazy like that. So when you go back and look at the average returns over that 40-year period, again, 73 through 2013, again, stocks up 10.98. Bonds were actually up 8.6. Cash investments, boy, I wish we had these days back, up 5.15%. Now, you have to remember the early 80s and late 70s. But every investment carries its own risk. The number one risk when you're talking about fixed investments, Doug, and your favorite topic is inflation risk.
Inflation, yes. That cost of goods and services continues to climb, whether loudly or quietly. It impacts every one of us.
You know, it just reduces the buying power of every asset. Like Rod was talking about the NASDAQ. 5,000 is not 5,000 if you adjust for inflation. It's over 6. But can your investment outpace inflation? Inflation, the damaging effects of inflation obviously increase over time. They compound just like every other compounded return. In fact, if you look at inflation-adjusted returns over that 40-year period, stocks aren't 10. It's actually 6.5. Bonds aren't 8. It's 4.25. And cash, not 5, Doug, but 0.98%.
Yep.
The other risk when you talk about, fixed income is tax risk. I mean, taxes reduce returns every year. Can the investment outpace risk, or can you put it in a tax favorable investment? Liquidity risk. You know, mm-hmm. if you can't sell something, you should get paid a little bit more. That's always a risk. But number one, man, is longevity risk. Ultimately, the greatest risk we all have is putting those taxes and inflation together. You compound them together, and it's a bad deal. You take out taxes, you take out inflation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I used to do a program called 8 Ways Seniors Messed Up Their Finances, and we used to talk about cash accounts being a short-term parking place for your money.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the time you considered taxes and you considered inflation, you were going backwards. So, Doug, I guess the real risk of having too much money in a fixed account is that you're going to go backwards slowly, right?
That's exactly right. And we know, and we've done this analysis many times on this program, you need to double your income. How many years?
Yeah.
18 years.
Yep.
How are you going to get that accomplished? And you can't do that with some of those strategies that don't outperform taxes and don't outperform inflation.
In fact, you know, we talk about the rule of 72 when it comes to accumulation, how long it takes to double your money. 7.2% into 72 is a 10-year doubler. Well, when you take out taxes and inflation, how long does it take you to double your money if you have it all in fixed income? Cash, 71 years. Mm-hmm. Bonds, 17 years. And even in stocks with a 6.858% return, it's 11 years. The other illusion that I know people have that haven't been in this business as long as Doug and I have is the illusion that you can predict the markets, that you can predict when it's a good bull market, you can predict when a bear market's coming. And Doug, there's a lot of people on the airways every single day that sure believe they can do it. But I can tell you, statistically, they cannot. It's not even close. In fact, a statistician did some research some scholar did something on predicting the markets, and it was like a million zeros and then 2288 to actually have a chance of timing the market. It just isn't hardly possible, right, Doug?
That's exactly right, David. And we have heard this and heard this and heard this. And you know what? Some heroes are made because they made a prediction in 2007 that hadn't been right before 2007. Then other people who made predictions before 2007, one lady comes to mind, and then in 2010 or 11, she made a terrible prediction, and people act like they know. There's different sense and ways things work together, but the absolute predicting of the market, the timing of it, just next to impossible.
Because you might have been, clients will say to us, so if things start to look bad, will you pull us out of the market? No. You don't get it. That you can't time it. You don't know. I mean, that's why you do a properly diversified, risk-adjusted portfolio.
Exactly.
If you don't have the stomach for the volatility in the market, then don't be in the market. Don't put it all in the fixed income either, because we just talked about those risks. And just like a strand of hair, anything by itself is going to break easy. But as you braid those together, it becomes stronger, and a portfolio is absolutely no different. And, you know, since World War II, we've had 12 bull markets, 11 bear markets. The bear markets have actually been pretty small in length, but that can be deceptive, because keep in mind that a bull market has to work twice as hard to make up for the previous bear. As an example, if we've had a bull market that goes up 100%, it only takes a 50% decline in a bear market to go back to your pre-bull market value. So basically, folks, you cannot time the market, and if you try to and you miss out on just even a few days, it's devastating. From 1994 through 2013, if you just excluded the five best months during that period of the stock market, your returns went from almost 10 down to 6.6. 30 best months out of then you were actually negative 1.8. If you go to days, Doug, and this is astounding, but from 1994 through the end of 2013, if you just missed 10 of the best days during that time trying to time this thing, your return is half of what it would have been by staying in the market. And if you missed 30 of the best days, you practically earned no money. Doug, that's just investing in winners is not easy. Everyone thinks that. Rod talked about that in his segment. Mm-hmm. That's another illusion. You can't just pick something and sit it on the sidelines. You don't want to love something that can't love you back. I mean, you need to be practical about this thing. So when it comes to investing, there's always the illusion. And I'm trying to educate people on this, because I had a guy in my office this week, as an example, that said, can't I just buy something that's 5% guaranteed and forget about it? I had to look him straight in the eye and say, no, there isn't any. Risk-free investments, quote, don't really exist. Treasuries, 2%, 10-year. If we have 2% inflation, you're zero. If you pay taxes on your earnings, you're negative. So, no, there is no place. And, Doug, it's so hard. And I know you love to show people this. It's so hard to pick which one is going to be the next best performer.
David, everyone talks about the winners. Nobody talks about the losers. But the bottom line is, when you look at the rotation of trying to have the absolute best performing asset class every single year, it's next to impossible. For example, if we look from 1999 to 2013, mid-cap stocks, mid-cap growth stocks, how many times do you think they were the number one performing asset class?
Two or three.
Two or three, exactly, two. What about international? How many things, after all we've heard about the BRICS and China and all this stuff happening around the world, how many times do you think international was the number one performing asset class?
Only because I've studied this chart over and over, two or three.
Two or three, there you go, two. How many times do you think, though, and this is the one that's the most deceiving, most people listening to this show, most people in America have their stock portfolio allocated to this particular asset class.
Large cap.
Large cap. S&P
500.
How many times do you think the large cap growth sector was the number, where this is where most people have their money, by the way? Over 60% of people have their money in large cap stocks, U.S. domestic. How many times do you think that was the number one performing asset class?
One or two?
One time. Since 1999.
See, that's the thing. Last year, the S&P, the year before S&P, that was the place to be. But a well-diversified stock portfolio last year shouldn't have done 13. It should have done about 8. Now, this year, NASDAQ's on fire. Mid-caps are on fire. So, folks, you got to have the reality check when it comes to investments. Quit taking a short-term view at this thing. Take a long-term view. Hey, we got to take a break. Come back. We're going to wrap up the show. Hey, I should actually be here the entire show because I'm only here for a couple segments. I have to get all my energy out in those two. So, bear with me,
folks. I'll stop talking.
All right. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. If you missed any of the show, you can always check it out on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock or always on WGCRadio.com. It was the first week of the month, and that is the investment show. Next week, we're going to have Tom Bunger, local estate planning attorney, in live in studio. Can't wait. Tom always does a terrific job. We'll be talking about wills and trusts, powers of attorney, appointment of healthcare representatives, how you coordinate all of that, and how do you make some of those really tough decisions. You know, I always tell folks, when you think about estate planning, you talk about these documents, think about it in 3 to 5 year increments. You know, in the next 3 to 5 years, if something happened, I would want this. Also, you know, don't get too bent out of shape about fair is always equal. You know, I know when you have 3 or 4 kids, you think you got to divide it all equally. Not necessarily. Fair's not always equal. We'll talk a little bit about leaving income inheritances versus cash inheritances, how you can do that through a trust. So Tom Bunger will be in the studio live, and he always does a terrific job. Also, don't want to forget to mention the Rejuvenate Your Retirement, the educational course for retirees, offered through the Center for Lifelong Learning over at Ivy Tech Community College here in Bloomington. Doug Hughes will be instructing next Tuesday. We'll start, and then another class will start towards the end of March, and you can go to, let's see how you do this, you go to Ivy Tech's website, and I wish I could tell you off the top of my head, where is it, Doug?
It's right there, inside of the back page.
All right, oh, here we go. Thank you very much. So we go to Ivy Tech. Where is it, Doug? .edu.
Let me take control of this here.
ivytech.edu. So go to ivytech.edu, go to the Lifelong Learning Center section, look for Rejuvenate Your Retirement. It's about $30 or $40 to come, I believe. I should know this before I start talking about it. But anyway, it's a great course. It's over two days.
2 days.
I think it's 4 hours total.
Mm-hmm.
It's like taking a drink from a fire hydrant. A lot of information. You get time with the instructor to talk about your own personal stuff mm-hmm. as part of the tuition. You get a great big textbook. It's really a great class, and we're excited to be part of this.
Absolutely. We've done this for 7 or 8 years now, and it's always gotten, you know, very good response, really, really informative stuff. And people will learn things about taxes, really about health care costs, mm-hmm. estate planning. David, so much to learn, so much to talk about.
It'll be a lot of fun. So, folks, we appreciate you hanging out with us. Thanks to Rod and thanks to Doug for kicking off the show while I was watching my son wrestle. And again, next week, Tom Bunger will be live in studio to help direct you in your estate planning. We'll be back again next Thursday night at 6. Thank you, everyone. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor, 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.